This is the first time that we've had international visitors who came all the way from China to hear the next two reviews. And Dr. Lie is from, I'm probably saying it wrong, is a physiatrist, and Mr. Wang is a physiotherapist. And they are here with Dr. Dean. They are here from the Department of Rehabilitation Therapy at the Sun Yat-sen Medical College and the Shanghai Sunshine Rehabilitation Center. So this is our first international podcast, and we're very pleased. And they've asked permission to take some photos, and the students have agreed. And if they send them to us, we can use them with the podcast. So without further ado, we have our third pediatric presentation of the day. And this one relates to Down syndrome. And the co-supervisor is Dr. Nazneen Virjee-Babel, who is back there. Want to raise your hand, Naz, who is the director of research for the Down Syndrome Foundation in Burnaby, and provided not only some good background, but also a video clip, as I understand. So take it away, Lucia, Stephanie, Colleen, and Maria.
Thank you, Susan. Good morning, everybody. We are very excited to present to you our work on the effects of therapy on gait of children with Down syndrome. And I'm going to present the introduction and the conclusion. Maria is going to come and talk about the methodology. Steph is going to talk about the discussion, and Colleen is going to cover the results. A bit of background. Down syndrome is the most common disorder of genetical inheritance, which affects one in 700 live births. It is due to trisomy of chromosome 21 and more rare of chromosome 22 and 15. Some of its physical characteristics are muscle weakness, hypotonia, and ligamentous laxity, which result in a variety of musculoskeletal and orthopedic problems and in gross motor delay. An example of gross motor delay, it's walking. Children with Down syndrome achieve walking approximately 1 year later than typically developing children. As we know, walking has further implications on their ability to play, learn, and interact socially with other children. Even their parents consider walking as the most valued milestone. We included this video to illustrate some of the gait characteristic of children with Down syndrome. As you can see, some of those characteristics are a wide base of support, pronated feet, hip abduction in swing, foot flat contact, locked knees, wrist extension, and use of upper limbs, head and neck to maintain balance. So even when they achieve walking, their gait pattern is inefficient and results in more energy expenditure, lacks the adaptability to other environments, and constitute a drawback for progression to more specialized movements. So what therapies do they receive? For these children, therapy starts usually in infancy, and they commonly require a combination of physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech and language therapy. Physical therapy intervention aim to increase strength, motor control, and function through different techniques. For example, a hypotonic child would benefit from active facilitation, postural control training, body awareness techniques, stabilization techniques, use of therapeutic aids, and many others. Occupational therapists are more involved with developing visual motor and manipulative skills, such as handwriting, cutting, drawing, with a focus on community participation. And oral motor skills and speech are the expertise of speech and language therapists. So we want to know, can physical therapy affect the gait of these children? The literature is scarce overall, with some reviews on early intervention and Down syndrome addressing different outcomes. With regards to gross motor skills, Gibson and Harris review concluded that only 3 out of 9 studies show reliable training effects. Yet Nilham reviewed the same set and concluded that the bulk of evidence suggests positive effects for gross motor training. We also came across another review by Lauslatter in 1996, but it was in Dutch. So we've chosen to do this review because, as we've shown, no systematic review on this topic exists. Literature in the area is unfocused. We want to support evidence-based practice, and gait is the most important gross motor skill. Therefore, this study's objective is to systematically review and rate the levels of evidence and methodological quality of studies that examine the effect of various therapeutic intervention on the gait of children with Down syndrome. And I'm gonna let Maria talk about the methodology.
Okay, so before I present the methodology of our review, it's important to note that when we started our systematic review, we knew from a preliminary search that there wasn't a lot of literature out there. So we had to start broad and then get more specific. We were initially looking at the effects of physical therapy on any gross motor function, but gait was always in the back of our minds. To begin, we searched these 9 online databases. It was quite extensive, as Sport Discuss goes as far back as 1830. We also created email auto alerts in the Ovid and EBSCO interfaces. Here are our search terms. We used the same terms in every database to be systematic. As you can see here, terms for our population include words like translocation 15, 21, and 22, because those have all been linked to Down syndrome. As well, we had to use terms like mongolism, which are not appropriate for today's world, because we wanted to capture articles throughout time. Some of our terms for intervention included physical therapy, exercise therapy, and hydrotherapy. Some of the outcomes that we used were terms like balance, coordination, and strength. As you can see by our search terms, we were broad and used many terms so that we could capture the biggest pool of relevant literature. After the search, our selection procedure began. Stage 1 of the article selection process was the title phase, of which 2 reviewers independently screened. The titles had to include 2 of either a population of Down syndrome, a physical therapy-related intervention, or an outcome of gross motor function, or the title was ambiguous and selected for further screening. We operationally defined physical therapy for this review as the use of aids, therapeutic exercise, and the application of modalities to maximize human movement potential. The same process occurred during stage 2, the abstract screening phase, but at this stage the articles had to include all of the criteria. We also added in at this stage that the population had to be between 0 and 17 years of age. We chose the under 18 age range because in Canada that's what's considered to be a child. There was only 1 article where we had to apply the age range inclusion criteria, so in the end, the age cutoff that we chose was not detrimental to this review. Okay, during stage 3 of the selection procedure, we divided the full text articles among all 4 reviewers. Each reviewer extracted the population, intervention, and outcome data of their respective studies and put it into a table, of which we called the PICO chart. It was necessary to create this chart because by looking at the abstracts, we had a varied collection of articles, and we wanted to create a way to find a common grouping of articles to form the basis of our review. As you can see, this is an example of our PICO chart. In the first article, we weren't able to obtain. In the second article, we ended up including it in our study as reflected by the asterisks, and so on and so forth for every single full text article. Through analyzing our PICO chart, some common trends emerged. Early intervention was one, but as Lucia mentioned, reviews have already been done on that topic. There were a group of articles that focused on vestibular training, but not enough to make a systematic review on. There were enough articles, however, with an outcome of gait. So at this point, stage 3, our selection criteria came to include that the outcome had to be a variable of gait, and we defined gait the purposes of this review as reciprocal bipedal locomotion. To summarize our final inclusion criteria, we included studies from peer-reviewed journals that were in English, Chapters from books and abstracts from conferences and proceedings were excluded from this review. The population had to have a clinical diagnosis of Down syndrome and be between 0 and 17 years of age. No exclusions were made on the basis of additional impairments or prior receipt of physical therapy treatment. The intervention had to be any physical therapy-related intervention provided, supervised, or prescribed by a healthcare professional, whether individually or in groups, or in the child's home, school, or health service setting. We excluded interventions aimed at caregivers. The outcome was any variable of gait that fit our operational definition. So once we had our final inclusion criteria, we were able to carry on with other methods of searching. We did a gait-specific search in all of the 9 databases to find any omissions from the general search. We also hand-searched the following 6 journals, but we only hand-searched the online volumes of the journals, which on average went back about 15 years. We did forward citation searches as well on the authors of included studies using the Web of Science Citation Index. We screened reference lists of included articles and relevant background articles, and we contacted key authors and clinical experts in the field via email for other relevant studies. Articles were saved in RefWorks, duplicates were removed, and we seized all search methods in June 2007. When it came to rating the methodological quality and rigor of the articles, 2 reviewers independently scored the articles using the Pedro scale. We chose the Pedro scale because it is well known in the PT community, and research shows that it is valid for use in systematic reviews. So here's the Pedro scale, as some of you are probably familiar with. It's out of 11 points, but point number 1 is not included, so the score is out of 10. The interpretation of the Pedro score is actually varied in the literature, but generally greater than or equal to 6 is good to excellent, and less than or equal to 5 is fair to poor. For scoring the levels of evidence, once again, 2 reviewers independently scored articles using this version of Sackett 2000. It is a scale from 1A to a score of 6. We chose, there are many versions of Sackett 2000 available in the literature, many versions, so we chose the one that made the most sense to us and the most sense to the systematic review. For our data extraction form, we created a form specifically for this review. The form included describing the participants, how they were recruited, the methods, inclusion and exclusion criteria, and a detailed description of the interventions, outcomes, and results. 2 reviewers independently extracted data onto this form, and I'll just note that at any of the above stages, disagreement was resolved by third-party arbitration. So the articles were not similar enough to do a formal analysis on, so all that we were able to do for data extraction is to create summary tables. One table compared the study characteristics, like population and intervention. The other summary table compared the outcomes used and the results. We also calculated Kappa scores for inter-observer agreement during all stages of the review, including the Pedro stage and the levels of evidence stage. Colleen will now give you our results.
Okay, so now we're going to look at the results of our study. So this diagram shows that our electronic search identified 5,197 articles for title screening. Of these, 380 articles were selected for abstract screening, from which 64 articles were selected for full-text screening. And you can see that the inter-rater reliability was 0.79 for title screening and 0.86 for abstract screening. Full-text screening identified 10 articles that met all inclusion criteria and ultimately formed the basis for this review. Inter-rater agreement was 1 for full-text screening. No relevant studies were identified through other search strategies, which included hand-searching and contact with key authors. We found that the main reasons for excluding articles included articles not found in English, book chapters or theses, irretrievable articles, articles whose outcome was not gait, and studies whose discussion mentioned an effect on gait, but only reported the gross outcome measure score in the results instead of the specific walking dimension or index. Oh, is that better? Okay, sorry. Go on. So of the 10 final articles, 3 were on orthoses, 7 were on other interventions, which we will go into more detail later in the presentation. A combined total of 181 children with Down syndrome were studied. Most articles primarily focused on the Down syndrome population. However, three studies used Down syndrome as a subpopulation. 8 of the 10 studies showed significant or positive results in some aspect of gait as measured by their selective outcome measure. So looking at the methodological quality using the PAGO score, which Maria outlined, you can see that our highest study achieved a 6, while our lowest achieved a 1, and this has been split onto two sides for ease of presentation. Most studies fell in the 3 to 5 range. Blinding was one of the common trends not seen in these articles, likely due to the nature of the intervention performed, as is often seen in physical therapy research. So having lower methodological quality of studies will affect our ability to draw conclusions from these articles and ultimately the recommendations that we can make. So looking at the levels of evidence, again, we're determined using versions of Sackett 2000. Again, these results have been split onto two slides for clarity. Inter-rater agreement was found to be 1 for levels of evidence. The majority of our final articles were either pre-post or repeated measures, 1 an exploratory study, 1 a retrospective study, and finally 1 a randomized control trial. So our levels of evidence range from 2B to 5, with most falling into the 4 to 5 range. Again, having most studies in the low range will affect our overall ability to draw conclusive recommendations and clearly shows a need for higher levels of research in this area. So now we'll be looking at the articles in more detail. For ease of understanding, we've combined the results of the studies as well as their discussion as they closely tie together. So orthoses was our first intervention. 3 of our studies use orthoses as an intervention, all scored 4 on the levels of evidence and 4 to 5 on the PAGO. The first was Martin, 2004, who used supramalleolar orthotics 8 hours per day for 6 weeks with no real control group, but compared the same children to their shoes-only results. 14 Down syndrome children were used, whose ages ranged from 3 to 8 years. The next was Selby Silverstein, 2001, who used specially fabricated foot orthoses 5 hours per day for up to 4 consecutive days, comparing to the shoes-only condition and children without Down syndrome. In this study, 16 Down children were studied, as well as 10 non-Down syndrome, whose ages ranged from 36 to 84 months. Lastly, Petetti, 2005, used dynamic foot orthoses for 2 months and 1 week with an unclear frequency and used a non-orthoses condition for these children for comparison. This study used Down syndrome as a subpopulation, having only 2 of the 17 subjects with Down syndrome, and those children's average age was 28 months. So looking at the outcomes, you can see that they are varied for these studies. Martin used gait as the outcome, as measured by the gross motor function measure, dimension E. Selby Silverstein used gait speed, measured by a tachometer, and Petetti also used gait, but was measured by the Peabody Motor Scale 2 local motion section. Martin was the only study that found significant results from the use of orthoses. Of the physical therapy interventions identified through the systematic review, orthoses was the only intervention where multiple studies were conducted, all with a consistently low level of study design. The orthoses wear time and frequency of use were not comparable between the 3 studies. No study conducted follow-up investigations for the long-term effects of orthoses as a meaningful physical therapy intervention, and each study explored a different aspect of gait using varying outcome measures. Subjects' ages range from 28 months to 8 years. All the studies used small sample sizes for their Down syndrome population, ranging from 2 to 6, with 1 using Down syndrome as a subpop group, leading to difficulty in statistically showing an effect of the intervention. Finally, only 1 study was found to have a control group, while the other 2 studies utilized a non-orthoses condition within their experimental population for comparison. Despite the common use of orthoses, the intervention parameters and population were so varied that a subgroup analysis was not able to be conducted. Only 1 of the 3 studies reported a significant result for this intervention. So given the limited statistical findings in the use of orthoses for gait and the lack of high-level evidence in this area, the ability to generalize orthoses as an intervention for the Down syndrome population at large is weakened. However, with the recognition that orthoses are often prescribed to children with Down syndrome, and without the evidence to prove their effectiveness, we recommend that clinicians evaluate their suitability and effectiveness on a case-by-case basis. So now Steph will go on to talk about the other 7 interventions identified.
Okay, so the first intervention we're going to take a look at is active therapy, which in this case focused on stair walking. So Lafferty 2005 study focuses on the use of whole and part task practice of stair walking. Although stair walking is not typically thought of as gait, it did fit our operational definition of bipedal reciprocal locomotion. It can also be inferred that increased skill in this task might carry over to the biomechanically similar task of walking. The goals of active therapy exercise were first to obtain the movement and second to refine the movement in an individualized way. Exercises were designed to promote body position, develop strength, and included both whole and part task practice of ascending and descending stairs. To note, in assessing the methodology of this experiment, the pre-post test design, wherein kinematic data of children ascending and descending stairs, were compared before and after 12 weeks of therapy. Also, the small sample size of only 7 children with Down syndrome. The results did show improvements in kinematic data and the gait patterns for both ascending and descending stairs. In conclusion, whole and part task practice of stair walking was shown to yield improvements in stair walking kinematics, including fewer compensatory strategies like less forward lean during stair ascent and less trunk rotation during stair descent. These exercises could easily be implemented in a physical therapy program, both in the clinical and home setting. The study's design quality and methodology was assessed as a Sackett level 4 and a PEDRA score of 5, with a small sample size of only 7 children with Down syndrome being the most significant critique. As such, a clinical recommendation is that active therapy, including both whole and part task practice of stair walking, may be useful to facilitate gait in children with Down syndrome. And now onto treadmill training, and this picture illustrates how treadmill training can be done in infants. So Elric et al. 2001 utilized treadmill training as an intervention specifically targeted at walking. Infants of about 10 months old were supported by their parents on customized motorized treadmills, and the infants subsequently generated a stepping pattern. 30 children with Down syndrome were randomized either to this experimental group or to the control group of physiotherapy. The results were quite impressive and statistically significant, illustrating that the experimental group achieved independent walking a whole 100 days before the control. In conclusion, treadmill training is a unique and innovative treatment that is specifically targeted at improving gait by capitalizing on early motor stepping reflex as a means to strengthen muscles, neuromotor pathways, and to improve balance. Of the reviewed studies, this randomized control trial was the highest quality of evidence, with a Sackett level 2B and a PEDRA score of 6. Because of the rigorous scientific methodology, and since the outcome shows statistically significant improvements, it is our clinical recommendation that treadmill training should be considered as a treatment option for infants with Down syndrome. However, the practicality of implementing this treatment in the clinical setting is queried. And now on to horseback riding. So Winchester et al. 2002 assessed the impact horseback riding has on gross motor function, like the time to walk 10 meters, and through the locomotor domain of the gross motor function measure. To note, in assessing the methodology of this experiment, the repeated measures design wherein these gait outcomes were assessed throughout therapy without comparison to a control group. Also, note the small sample size and that only 3 out of the 7 children had Down syndrome. The results did show significant improvements in the locomotor domain of the GMFM, but not for the time to walk 10 meters. Previous literature on therapeutic horseback riding well establishes its usefulness in improving strength and balance of developmentally delayed children. Winchester et al.'s conclusions corroborate this by showing improvements in the locomotor domain of the GMFM, but surprisingly, not for gait speed. Additionally, unique to our assessed studies, Winchester et al. Allowed a follow-up period of 7 weeks post-therapy, which demonstrated sustained improvements in the GMFM score. Overall, the study design quality and methodology was assessed as a Sackett 4 and a Pedro 5. The small sample size of only 7 children, only 3 of which had Down syndrome, is the most significant critique. As such, our clinical recommendation is that therapeutic horseback riding may be of benefit to the gait of children with Down syndrome, and we recommend that it be considered in use in combination with other therapy approaches. Now on to sensory integration therapy, vestibular therapy, and neurodevelopmental therapy. And this picture illustrates one of the treatments used for vestibular therapy, swinging. So Ioannik et al. 2003 study compared 3 different intervention groups, each of 15 children with Down syndrome. The first had sensory integration therapy, comprising of interventions aimed at visual perception, body awareness, and visual motor coordination. For example, playing with puzzles, pegboards, or a moving ball. The second group had the described sensory integration therapy along with vestibular therapy, where vestibular therapy included swinging and developing equilibrium reactions. The third group had neurodevelopmental therapy, such as facilitation of movement patterns, walking activities, and trunk extensor strengthening. Several outcome measures were used, including 2 that focused on gait, the time to walk 10 steps forward and 10 steps to the side. Results showed that only the NDT intervention showed significant improvement in both pre-post comparison for both forward and side walking. Also, NDT was significantly better in improving forward walking compared to the sensory integration and vestibular groups. Of the studies assessed, Ioannik et al. Had the largest sample size with 45 children with Down syndrome analyzed. The overall study design quality and methodology was assessed as a Sackett 4 and a Pedro 5, with the most significant critique being the true lack of a control group. As such, a clinical recommendation is that since NDT was found to be effective at improving walking skills of children with Down syndrome, it may be considered a treatment option. And strength training. So Sayers, 1996, evaluated the effect of strength training on gait in children with Down syndrome. The strengthening program consisted of an exercise program specific to each subject, utilizing ankle weights and using progressive interactive facilitation to increase balance, muscle tone, and strength for upright locomotion. The heterogeneity amongst the 5 children participating was emphasized throughout the multiple case study design and in the individualization of the strengthening programs and their progression. Changes in gait, pre and post treatment, were captured through several outcome measures. The Hawaii Early Learning Profile strands, with the gross motor section including walking and running, did show improvements. The progressive model of infant stepping movements also showed improvements. The Battelle Developmental Index, however, showed improvements in 2 children, but no change in 2 children. Additionally, gait analysis of a video recording of the children walking was also used to accurately compare the height of the step and the stride length. Results, though, were difficult to draw conclusions from. This is partly because of the 5 children, 1 withdrew and another did not acquire walking skills within the time of the study, and so could not complete all outcome measures. For example, for the outcome of height step, only 1 child showed improvements in both feet, another child improvements in only 1 foot, and in the 3rd child, both feet declined. Overall, the results for this strength training intervention are difficult to interpret due to the qualitative study design, the lack of statistical analysis, and the small sample size with 1 withdrawal and 1 child with incomplete data. The small sample size is the most significant critique since it distorts any treatment effects and makes generalization to the Down syndrome population challenging. However, the approach of acknowledging each child's health needs and individualization of therapy is commended. The study design quality and methodology was assessed as a SACID 5 and a PEDRO 3. Since results were varied, our conclusions are that we are unable to draw any clinical conclusions or make recommendations based from this research. Developmental coaching. So Essenther 1984 used a retrospective study design to assess the age that independent walking was achieved amongst children with Down syndrome who had participated in developmental coaching therapy. This was subsequently compared to literature-reported norms for the acquisition of independent walking in Down syndrome. The intervention of developmental coaching, described as proprioceptive and kinesthetic input, is vague with unspecified duration and frequency of activities such as hand skills, reaching for a dangling ring or cube, and mobility skills such as pre-walking progression, pulling to stand, and walking alone. Results were reported as 40% of the intervention group achieving free walking by 18 months. Current literature states that the average age of acquisition of walking to be 24 months in the Down syndrome population, and so we do consider this result relevant. Overall, of the studies assessed, this study had the poorest methodological quality with a SACIT level 4 and a PEDRO score of 1. The retrospective study design, without true experimental manipulation or an integrated control group, are the most significant critiques. As such, and considering the poorly described treatments, it is our conclusion that clinical recommendations cannot be drawn from this research. And finally, jump training. Wang et al. 2002 evaluated the effect of jump training on the balance of children with Down syndrome. Among the outcomes for balance were two gait measures, the number of steps walking forward on a line and walking on a balance beam. Although not considered typical walking patterns, these did fit our definition of reciprocal bipedal locomotion. The intervention consisted of jumping practice for 30 minutes three times a week for 6 weeks, and results were reported as significant improvements in the gait parameters. Despite the results being statistically significant, the improvements ranged from 1 to 2 extra steps along the line or along the beam, and the functional significance of this change is worth questioning. Overall, the study quality and methodology was assessed as a SACIT 4 and a PEDRO 5. The improvements in gait consisted of only 1 to 2 additional steps along the beam or line, and despite being statistically significant, may not represent a functionally significant change. However, since balance and jump training was shown to have a positive, although small effect, it is our clinical recommendation that it could be considered as part of a program to improve the gait of children with Down syndrome. And now Lucha is going to finish up with some conclusions.
So in conclusion, as my colleague showed, research presents a mixture of interventions and outcomes, and this is of low quality design. Therefore, we can only recommend different therapies to be used in combination and tailored to individual needs and preferences of the child. Also, we believe it's very important for pediatric therapists to reevaluate each child's progress in regards to the therapy received in order to ensure best evidence practice. Future research. This review unquestionably proves the need for more research in the future of higher design quality and with a focus on the optimal treatment parameters, which can aid clinicians in their practice. For example, the 3 orthotic studies that had inconsistent treatment parameters, making it difficult for use in clinical practice. The clinical community also is aware of this need, as demonstrated by the up-and-coming research. We believe that in the next 2 years, this systematic review may need to be reassessed in order to incorporate the newer studies. One limitation of our review was that a small number of articles were not available for inclusion because they were not published in English, and the authors did not have the appropriate funding for translation fees. Another limitation was that we had little experience working with children with Down syndrome and even less expertise in the field of publishing literature. However, we feel that being guided by supervisors with long-standing experience in clinical pediatrics and who are considered research experts in the area of Down syndrome, successfully compensated for this limitation. On this note, we would like to thank two clinicians and researchers, Anne Chin, Bonnie Forrester, Julia Looper, Kenneth Pitetti, Charmaine Rose, and Del Ulrich. And special thanks to Susan Harris, Nazneen Virgil Babul, Charlotte Beck, Angela Bush for their support and contributions. Here are our references, and we're open for questions.
Oh, like, because some of the studies were like, if we give parents the instructional in a pamphlet, whereas verbal instructions, is it going to improve? So we only found maybe like one or two articles on that, and we thought since it wasn't an actual therapeutic intervention, it was just giving them a pamphlet or verbally, then it wasn't really fitting to include.
So you didn't exclude those ones where the parents were directly
involved? Oh, no, because the parents were involved in most of these ones.
So only
if it was directly looking at the parents, yeah. How to teach the parents.
Yeah.
Yasha?
When you guys were talking about the horseback riding, the article that you mentioned had only 7 subjects and 3 of which were Down syndrome patients.
That's right.
Was the improved in the walking just the Down syndrome patients or overall for the whole group?
Overall, it was mixed for the whole group, but we just presented the Down syndrome children just because that's what we were looking at.
That's for all of our studies. The ones that had subgroups, the article actually gave us the results just for the Down syndrome, so we only used those results.
That was a great presentation, and your images were really powerful and cute. I'm just wondering if you can comment on overall about the adherence to some of the interventions, as well as adverse events, or whether or not the primary studies have been talked about any side effects or adverse events as a result of any of this training?
There was only one study that had an adverse event. That was interestingly enough, the one that found positive effects for orthoses. One of the kids were excluded because the child could not tolerate the orthotic, and they were excluded. And then there was an outlier which scored very low, and then she threw that one out too. So we're not sure if she included that outlier, would the results have been significant? We don't know. That was the only adverse effect. And as far as adherence, it wasn't really reported. Only one study talked about giving the parents a log, and they were supposed to write in the log.
And most were short term, so I think adherence isn't an issue.
Yeah.
I think.
That was a great presentation. And I love the images. The video is really good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that? Because if you look at his intervention time, a lot of the children were only on the treadmill between 1 to 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the only other study that showed some significant difference was the study where they did the MBT, which was about 1.5 hours a day for about the same total length of time. So there's a real discrepancy between times that these kids were on the treadmill and what we
I'm the one who's looking at future research. So based on his article, I mean, you can't just say go out and buy a treadmill, but there are, as our emerging research, there are 3 other studies on treadmill training coming out. 2 of them are by Ulrich, but so a little bit of bias, but on one of them he looked at parameters like high intensity versus low intensity treadmill training, and found actually in the high intensity treadmill training group that they improved 5 months earlier than the control, as opposed to the 3 months earlier. So that's one thing. And then he did a follow-up study to look if those improvements were, I think it was over 7 weeks, maybe more than that. And the ones that were in the higher intensity group improved more in mental domains, cognitive domains, as well as motor domains improvement. Also, Wu is coming up with an article to a completely different research lab on the efficacy of treadmill training, too. That should be coming up very soon in Gait and Posture. We just couldn't include it in this review because we weren't able to access it. So at this point, based on one article, I wouldn't say go out and buy a treadmill. But once those other three articles come out, depending on what the results are, maybe it's a little bit better to make a clinical recommendation. They're all looking at the time to start walking. Yeah, and then there's also another one coming out on, it's not gonna look at walking as an outcome, but the stepping pattern. So it's putting the babies now really small and just making them kick on this little machine and to see if it improves their stepping reflex, because that really is what the treadmill training does, to see if it improves their stepping reflex, improve the neuromotor so they can walk. So, I mean, that's five articles for right there that are going to have to be updated on the systematic review.
I think we were really excited about it because it was our highest quality of study, right? So it's the one we can make the most recommendation on in everything that we compared. It was something we're excited about, and also about the future research. I think it really shows that we're kind of on the cusp of something great right now. So
you guys probably know more about it than anybody in the world as far as what's coming along. That's very impressive. Have you been offered postdocs in any of those labs?
No. But Dale did respond to us. He was very kind and responded to us right away and told us what's coming out. So.
Good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed your presentation. Thank you. In one of your summary slides at the beginning, what you said that 8 out of 10 studies showed significance, and then you said it looked like or positive results. Should that have been an or rather than an or?
Because
if it's an or positive results, how was that established in a valid manner?
There were two different studies, and they were based on early intervention. So one of them showed...
Not that one. She's talking about the other slide. I know which slide you're talking about. Some of them didn't say statistically significant difference. That's not your... Some of them didn't say, oh, there's a statistically significant difference, and give us a p-value. Some of them just said, based on there was a significant improvement, but not statistically significant improvement. So they said significantly improvement. So we had to take their word that the improvement was significant. And then one study was qualitative. So with qualitative, they just said they improved. So 8 out of the 10 studies showed a statistically significant improvement or a...
If you think about publishing that, I think you'll have to give that phrase a bit of thought because a reviewer might tackle you on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because establishing significance that is non-statistical, I mean,
yeah.
Even statistical doesn't guarantee it.
Yeah.
But you still do it usually with at least 1-5% chance of being wrong.
Yeah.
But to conclude that it was significant, mm-hmm. and other than being just part of random sampling.
Mm-hmm.
So to just give that a little point, mm-hmm.
yeah.
take this to the next.
That's true.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Their editor will look at
you. That's it.
Thank you very much.